Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We're talking politics this hour. Later, we'll talk with Alan Gomez from USA Today about the politics of immigration and DACA. But we begin, as we do most Mondays, with the political junkie. Welcome back, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to talk about immigration here, Ken, and I've got a couple questions for our listeners, and I want you to think about this as well. Polling shows that a sizable majority of Americans want Congress to find some way to permit the undocumented young people who were brought to the U.S. by their parents to stay in the U.S. And I want to know from you listeners, and Ken will weigh in on this as well, is that where you are on the issue? If so, why? And President Trump may talk about tightening legal immigration limits at the State of the Union. I'd like to know how you feel about where legal immigration limits are. Should they grow, decrease, tighten, stay where they are? So weigh into me this morning about some of these questions that are swirling around immigration as we talk politics today. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Ken, the White House released its legislative strategy on getting immigration reform through Congress. The president is apparently going to talk about it tomorrow night at the State of the Union. Do you expect anything different, I guess, anything unusual than what we've already heard from the White House on this?
Well, there are some Republicans, maybe there's many Republicans who feel that trying to overhaul the entire immigration system, which both sides agree that is broken, I think that may be much bigger task than Congress and the White House is willing to do, And I'm thinking that maybe what they need to do is perhaps what members of Congress have done in their negotiations with each other, the bipartisan coalition between Susan Collins and Joe Manchin and people like that. And that is, on the one hand, allow the Dreamers, protect the Dreamers from deportation with a deadline of March 5th coming up very soon.
Uh-huh.
And to the Democrats' regret, the Democrats would still go along with, remember that wall funding that Mexico was going to pay for? Well,
yeah.
We know that Mexico is not going to pay for it, and Trump wants the $25 billion for it. I think those two things are doable. A larger question about whether restricting immigration, whether, you know, allowing people to bring in family members from around the world, certain countries mm-hmm. that are part of this lottery system,
right.
The so-called chain migration. I kind of think that that is bigger than the Congress can agree on. And I think there's some members who just feel like, let's start small and let's see if we can build on that.
So I want to be clear on what you're saying. You do think that there will be some measure around DACA, and you do think that there will be some kind of funding for the wall, and that's how they get to yes on DACA. But that doesn't sound comprehensive. And it sounds like you're saying you think that's
no.
all they can go ahead.
Exactly what you're saying. I don't think it can be comprehensive, even though everybody agrees that it needs to be a comprehensive overhaul because everybody agrees that the system is broken. But if there's one thing we learned from that abortive 3-day shutdown that basically Democrats did not get what they hoped for and probably came out losing on because we still have no more further protections for the DACA, for the Dreamers than we did before. I think they just feel that Trump, whether it's just ego, whether it's because it was his plan that helped him get elected, whatever the reasons are, he will not back down from that wall funding. And when you have people like John Kelly, the chief of staff, and Stephen Miller, the policy aide, and Republicans like Tom Cotton of Arkansas, the senator from Arkansas, who is a strong influence in Trump's ear, the Republicans are not going to back down for that. And if sometimes, as distasteful as that is for so many Democrats, I think they feel that if they're going to get an agreement, just as they got a chip deal for 6 years, mm-hmm. funding for the chip program, if that's going to protect the Dreamers, then we'll hold our nose and support it.
I'll come back to Kelly and Miller and Cotton's influence, because they're also apparently having influence on legal immigration limits, too. But let me grab a call here from Ethan. Yeah, let me go to Ethan in Plymouth here. Hi, Ethan. How are you thinking about this?
Well, last night was the Grammys, and they were doing some old musicals, and I was thinking about one of my favorites, Les Miserables. And remember, in the beginning of Les Miserables, the hero, Jean Valjean, steals a loaf of bread to feed his starving family.
Yeah.
And he's chased throughout the entire, you know, musical by Javert, the law, because he stole a loaf of bread. And I suppose there are 13% of Americans who look at these dreamers and they think to themselves, they broke the law. They were 7 years old, they're 8 years old, 6 years old, and they must be punished, that the law must be respected. And it just seems to me, I mean, I'm an attorney myself, it's an odd way to look at things, because there are laws out there which are just, it's morally wrong to murder, and there are laws out there, like, you know, how people get in and out of this country, and in immigration laws have changed quite a bit, and I cannot get myself to be worked up and angry with somebody who has come here to provide a better life for themselves or for their kids or was a child. And I don't understand what country we live in, because America is an idea. It's not a country. It's not a race. It's not a particular ethnicity. And, you know, the research will show that as long as people get an education, they will be a net benefit for our country. And so what we need to be focusing on is how is it that we can educate and prepare everyone who lives within our borders, whatever their status is, to be successful, because that's what makes America great, not, you know, particular whatever person's heritage is.
You know, Ethan, I want to say, I think you've distilled this really well into where the divisions are between the moral argument, Ken, which I hear some people in, and it's not all one party, because there are advocates for some kind of deal in all the parties, the moral versus the legal. For people that argue the legal side, it's pretty simple. You got ahead of the line. You shouldn't get the benefits that come from that. And you should wait for the other people who are doing this legally. And then there's the moral side, which I think Ethan articulated well. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Ethan for that. He was extremely articulate and basically gave the argument for just, you know, the moral argument for allowing people to have a better life. But at the same time, I don't even think the opposition is really based on legalities, even though we always talk about illegal immigrants and they broke the law because they're here illegally. A lot of it is still the politics, as we've talked about. There was a headline in Breitbart News last week that talked about Amnesty Don, talking about the president of the United States calling him Amnesty Don because he called for this program, to allow the dreamers here. So I don't even think it's about legalities. I think it's just about politics. Well, and for all the talks about the just one quick point, all the talks about the Lindsey Grahams and the Susan Collins and the Joe Manchins who are trying to work out a compromise, nobody's mentioning what's going on in the House, which is really filled with at least the majority is filled with those opposed to any kind of protections for the dreamers. So for all the talk about Mitch McConnell bringing along something that we could all agree on, we still have the House to deal with, and we don't know where that's going to go.
But Ken, I want to understand what you're saying when you say it's not really the legalities of it, it's the politics of it. I mean, I thought the politics of it were informed by this strict legal interpretation. You jump the line, the borders aren't secure, you're coming across unsecured borders. Is that not right?
Well, that's true. I mean, obviously, but that's in that sense, we're saying that the Democrats don't believe in the law and the Republicans believe in the law. I mean, I don't think it was, look, clearly the law is on the Republican side, or at least the anti-Dreamers side on this, because yes, they are here illegally. I mean, that's the whole quandary is, yes, there is a law. Yes, the law was broken. Yes, people are here illegally. And as Ethan said, as I said, very articulately, talked about, well, there's a human component to all this, and there's a moral component to this, and somehow lawmakers are going to have to combine the two.
We're having our Monday conversation on politics. Ken Rudin starts us off on Monday mornings, and we'll be talking with Alan Gomez from USA Today a little later. He covers immigration for USA Today. Immigration front and center. The president's going to talk about it during the State of the Union tomorrow night, and there has been a lot of congressional maneuvering for some kind of deal that both Republicans and Democrats can get behind. There's an interesting twist to this. There is also support building for decreasing limits on legal immigration. And that's something I'm going to talk to Ken and Alan about. But I'm curious about how you feel about that. Is that where you are on the issue? Do you think legal immigration, The limits of it should grow, should decrease, should stay about the same, with the acknowledgement that there are more and more people who would like to get into the United States. So if they stay the same, in some ways we're decreasing the numbers there. I want to know how you feel about legal immigration and the limits around that. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where a listener says, those limits should be so much looser. We desperately need skilled people as the silver tsunami of baby boomer retirement hits. Ken, you mentioned John Kelly, the chief of staff, Stephen Miller, an advisor to the president, and Tom Cotton, a senator from Arkansas. They are talking to the president about these legal limits and changing those. What do you know about that?
Well, it's my understanding that they went basically ballistic when President Trump said, you know, offhandedly. And that's what's so interesting about the State of the Union. It's wonderful for the president of the United States to read a script. And I'm not being cynical or obnoxious here, although maybe some people think of it as obnoxious. But the fact that he'll read a script for maybe 45, you know, prepared remarks for 45 minutes to 60 minutes, and then you'll hear these announcers, these pundits say, he sounded very presidential, and maybe there's a new Donald Trump, and the next day he'll do a tweet that will just upend all of that. But the point is, when the president talked the other day about his goal is to see perhaps a pathway to citizenship for the Dreamers. I mean, this is what happened with that deal when he was sitting with the cameras on in that room with Dick Durbin there and everything. And he was talking about, yes, I am open to this kind of a deal.
Right.
And when he says things like that, then the John, you know, the John Kellys and the Stephen Millers of the world say, oh, my goodness, what are you doing? And at that, actually, that very meeting, when Dianne Feinstein said, would you like a separate standalone bill on DACA? He said, absolutely.
Right.
And then Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, said, well, you don't really think that, Mr. President. And and said, oh, that's right, I don't.
Yeah, the dynamic, so the political dynamic of that was interesting. But Ken, back to specifically the legal immigration limits. How influential do you think Kelly, whom I was surprised to read a few weeks ago, it favors much stricter legal immigration limits, and Cotton and Stephen Miller? How influential do you think they can be on this?
I think they're extremely influential. But at the same time, the president has said over and over again, I mean, look, it's almost impossible to know what the president really wants other than the fact that he wants a deal. But he has said when he was campaigning and as president, he said he wants protection for these people. When he said that the DACA program is going to, you know, he said a few months ago that the DACA program is going to end as of March 5th. He said, I really hope we can do something to protect them. So I don't know if he does have those inner feelings of compassion or he says them because they sound popular. I mean, I really don't know. But in answer to your question about the influence of Miller and Kelly, I do think it's huge.
A call here from Al in Bloomington, Minnesota. Hi, Al. What are you thinking about on this?
Well, first of all, I think most people are happy allowing immigrants to come in, but nobody really knows what the numbers are, how they're determined. But I also think as far as the Dreamers, most people want the Dreamers to be able to stay, but you have to change the expectations of people who want to get in the country for the sake of themselves or their children. So my sister worked for immigration for 18 years. She always said, everyone wants to come to America.
All right. So when you say change the expectations, what do you mean?
What I mean is, if you're not going to have some rules, if you're going to allow it, that people can come in knowing that their children are automatically going to be able to stay, or their relatives, etc., then you really don't have any rules that stick, and people will try to get around the rules. And all you have to do is watch the National Geographic Border Wars, and you'll see how difficult it is to keep people from coming across the border.
All right. I appreciate the call to Maria in Fargo. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Carrie. Good morning.
Morning.
My parents and I immigrated here about 20 years ago from what was then the Soviet Union. We came here legally. My parents wanted nothing to do with any shape or form of illegal methods. We did know people that would pay off immigration officials, et cetera. These were obviously not migrant workers or people that were well off. Now my parents are have an extreme hard stance as far as legal immigration. You know, we had to go through a lot to come here. They're both educated, had to rebuild their entire lives, start from scratch. I feel like they think that maybe it's a little bit unfair, that while we sympathize with the plight of the migrant, it's obviously difficult to watch people carry their kids across the border and everything. But at the same time, it's not easy to get here legally either. And they value and treasure their American citizenship. And they definitely view it with an open heart. But at the same time, they are extremely, extremely have a hard stance on the legalization and making sure that people come here and benefit the society as a whole.
Maria, I'm so glad you called because this is an element.
That's a great call.
It is a great call. It's an element of immigration we haven't talked much about, Ken, but you see this in polling, right? Second, third generation immigrant families have fairly, conservative views about immigration.
Well, I think Maria's call, maybe, I think if anybody plays back this program, listen to what Maria said, because that is not an uncommon position. These people, Maria and her family and others like them, did what they were supposed to do. They followed the rules. They waited in line. I don't want to sound like Stephen Miller here, but the point is they did. And people, there were at least maybe 700,000 Dreamers alone who were brought here illegally. Now, is the alternative, well, therefore we should deport the 700,000? I think that's just unconscionable. But at the same time, I think what Maria is saying, and what maybe those who want a bigger change and overhaul of the immigration system, is you just can't have, you can't look at the Dreamers and what happened to them and think that there is and maybe Al mentioned this earlier in his call, that you just can't allow a porous border, not coming here sneaking over, but just coming here, staying here illegally, not following the rules, because then it encourages more lawbreakers to do so. So I think that is a very common and very understandable position for all those who did the right thing, who went through all this rigmarole and red tape to get here and see people here illegally and maybe protected as well.
Hey, Ken, I'm going to bring Alan Gomez in on this. He's an immigration reporter for USA Today. He's with us from Miami. Alan, good to have you on the line here.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
I wondered if you heard Maria's call. Were you on?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Maria called to say, my family did this the legal way. We came from what was then the Soviet Union. We went through a lot of, you know, upheaval. We had to start all over again. And she said her parents feel very strongly that that is the way that immigration should happen. And it is not really fair that people, quote unquote, jump the line. They've had experience with this. She says they take a very hard line on immigration. I wonder if in your reporting you come across immigrant families, immigrant communities that feel that way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the question of fairness is one that comes up repeatedly when we talk about illegal immigration. Back in 1986, the last time the country legalized it was about 2.5 million undocumented immigrants. That's the last time we did it because it's so difficult. Just Americans in general just don't like the idea of people kind of jumping in line, and they don't like cuts. But things get different when we talk about this Dreamer population that is the focus of Washington right now. The word fairness comes up quite a bit in that when you're 4 years old and your parents bring you to the United States, if you're 6, if you're 10, if you're 12, is it fair to that child to force them to go back to a country that they don't remember? Maybe they don't even speak the language anymore. So that's the defense of doing something for these Dreamers, which is why they're focused on them and not something broader to protect their parents or other undocumented immigrants.
A call here from Holly in Glencoe, who I think is speaking to that. Holly, is that much of what you wanted to say?
Well, I just had a concern about the DACA recipients. We've invested lots of money in them right now already for their education, and they're already assimilated. They speak English, dual language for, you know, in a lot of cases, most cases. And it just seems like a waste of resources to me to just kick them out.
Alan, do you hear that argument on the other side?
Oh yeah, that's one of the main arguments, and it's interesting because you hear that when it comes to this population, you know, I think there's universal support amongst Democrats to find some long-term solution for them, hopefully including citizenship from their perspective. But you even there's a lot of Republicans and a lot of conservatives that are supportive of this. There's a group called the Center for Immigration Studies, which advocates for lower levels of legal and illegal immigration.
Right.
They advise the White House quite a bit on their immigration policies, and their executive director has told me several times, like, look, this is a different population. This was not their fault. I have sympathy for them. Let's figure out something for them. So when you have even those kind of groups saying that we got to do something for this specific population, that shows you what a different case it is. Again, it gets a little bit different when you talk about that broader group of undocumented immigrants, the ones who made the decision to enter the country illegally.
Even so, Ken, I was watching an interview on CNN last week, and Marsha Blackburn was on, and she was saying things like, we don't think it's fair to allow someone to jump the line, and she seemed very leery about some kind of DACA deal. So given what you said about the House and some of the concern about getting to a deal in the Senate, what's the political path to this?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's the difference between, as I say, the Susan Collinses and the Joe Manchins and the Lindsey Grahams, who are trying to work out a compromise, where you have Marsha Blackburn, not only a member of the House, but she's running for the Senate in Tennessee. She's running for Bob Corker's Senate seat. And in the Republican primary, you don't go soft on immigration. That's just the rule of the game now, is that you have to out conservative your opponent. And Marsha Blackburn, who's very conservative to begin with, is not going to go soft on immigration. That's clear.
Hey, Ken, good to have you on the show. I'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
Quick thing about the economy, quick thing about the State of the Union, Donald Trump with a great economy and low job approval numbers, a fascinating contradiction there. I'll see you, Carrie.
Okay. See you next Monday. Ken Rudin with us, the political junkie. Alan Gomez continues with us. He's an immigration reporter for USA Today. And I'm asking you this morning, if you've just gotten in on the show, about how you think around limits of legal immigration. What do you think about a debate that seems to be picking up some steam around decreasing legal immigration limits? Of course, there's advocacy for increasing them, keeping them the same. I'd like your view on that, how you're thinking about it. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And from Twitter here to the current caller, I think our tweeter is talking about Maria from Fargo. Our tweeter says, because it was hard to immigrate, it shouldn't remain so. It wasn't good policy then either, and there's no line to get in. My grandfather came from Ireland, was charged a quarter, had to swear to abide the law, constitution, and promise to become a citizen, and it worked. You can reach me on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Alan, before I go back to the calls here, I want your sense about how robust this discussion is around limiting legal immigration numbers. Ken and I were talking about how Stephen Miller and John Kelly are influential people talking about this to the president.
It's become one of the central components for any kind of deal that they would be willing to accept. And to give some context to this, I mean, it's been really remarkable for me to watch this. I've been covering immigration for quite a while now, and it's when you talk, what they're proposing is massive. I mean, when they say we're going to limit chain migration, which is the term that they're using out of the White House, talking about restricting the ability of Americans to sponsor their relatives for immigration. I mean, this is something that goes against, you know, sort of the fundamental basis of immigration in this country for generations. The president has talked about switching to a more merit-based immigration system, and that, again, would completely flip what has been our historical immigration practice. And so they've only really started pushing this in the last few months, and it's kind of striking to me to think that somehow this Congress is going to be able to you know, fundamentally rearrange how we allow people into this country so quickly. That's a question of numbers. It's a question of our of economics, and it goes to that central core of what kind of country we want to be. So it's just really it's really remarkable to watch it play out in sort of this, you know, fast-forwarded, hyper-partisan negotiation that we've been going through these last few weeks.
Yeah, given what you've just said, over the weekend I was trying to figure out when the policies were different, when we did not have a policy of having people come immigrate to the United States and then opening the door to their family members. And I couldn't find a specific time in our history when that wasn't permitted. What yeah. do you know about it?
I've done a similar look, and I just can't find it. I mean, that's just how we've always been as a country, you know. And the idea, you know, President Trump talks a lot about using the examples of Canada and Australia, and it's this very, you know, kind of cold metric of, you know, what's your education? You get a certain amount of points if you have a master's degree. If you get more points if you have a PhD, mm-hmm. You get more points if you speak the language. What your assimilation possibilities are, and so switching to something like that would be completely against everything we've done, wherein you look at this at the argument now. They're saying, well, this family thing only brings in low-skilled immigrants. It doesn't really help. But I can point out to all sorts of studies that say the opposite, that once you allow your family to come in, they become your support network. They help you and the rest of the family kind of build up and start their own businesses and things like that. So there's two very strong arguments on either side of this, but it's one that we're doing without any hearings, without any committees taking a look at this. I mean, these are very deep ingrained conversations that we need to be having, and we just can't because of the way that these negotiations are taking place.
Kathy says on Twitter, I think there's a subset of Dreamers who came here legally but became undocumented through no fault of their own. Example, they came with their parents on a visa but fell through a crack on the way to citizenship. And Rich says, if the idea of limiting legal immigration is to buoy the employment of skilled native citizens, why aren't we funding higher ed? You can't fill positions for skilled workers with an unskilled populace to the phones to Hirsha in Plymouth. It sounds like you're on this path in some ways, Hirsha, to citizenship. Is that right?
Yes, Kerry. Thank you, first of all, for bringing this up. And I listened to this news, and it's amazing. I'm on a H-1B visa, and I've come here like 10 years ago, and I've done my master's from the reputed university here, and I've been working as a software engineer, senior software engineer, and all the things. And what I've observed is that, you know, we go through the same interview process as any other American citizen does for a job, mm-hmm. and we get into that job, and we wait. So I love this country. I mean, they've provided me with knowledge and everything, and I would love to live here. And I've applied for my immigration petition like 6 years ago.
Wow.
And current wait for an India, I am from India, and for an Indian citizen to be immigrated to United States, it is about 25 to 30 years. And between this, my kids who go to school here are legally going to school, but mm-hmm. they are dreamers as well. I mean, if I lose my visa, I have to go back to my country. And mm-hmm. What I wanted to know is, like, what, I mean, I've heard about this legal immigration with point-based system, but there is no steam coming into this. And I would like to know the prospect of the guest on this terms to see what exactly is being planned for this kind of immigration, where we actually compete for the high-skilled jobs and okay. we provide good money to the economy and we buy houses, real estate, and everything else. So,
yeah, Hirsha, thanks so much for the call. Really glad you could give us your perspective. Alan, do you know how his situation might be affected by this?
Well, right now, nobody does, because reforming our legal immigration system on a broader scale, in other words, you know, fixing our guest worker visas, you know, targeting more people with high-skilled degrees, that's part of some mythical phase two of immigration reform that they're talking about. Right now, the four pillars of what they're talking about are just creating a solution for the Dreamers, more border security at the southern border, limiting family-based migration, and ending the diversity visa lottery. So those are the only four components that they're really considering right now as part of this deal. And then they say that at some point later, they'll get to a phase two where they balance changes to the legal immigration system to bring in more guest workers and things like that, with more interior immigration enforcement and things like that. So, but that shows, I think, the complexity of this. I mean, this is by just building a border wall and limiting family-based migration, it's not going to do what many immigration experts say is the ultimate magnet of illegal immigration, which is cutting off the jobs for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's our guest worker programs. All of them are incredibly outdated. They from low-skill to high-skill workers, the businesses complain that there's not enough of them. Some people say that they're being taken advantage of, and with the particular visa that he was talking about, the H-1Bs, the Trump administration has announced that he's going to audit them more to make sure that people are coming in legitimately under this visa program and it's not being taken advantage of. But again, that visa program in and of itself is an incredibly complicated, difficult one to resolve. And again, it's just so hard to do that the way they're doing it right now. You can't really just negotiate that in a couple of meetings, throw something on the Senate or the House floor and see what happens. I mean, these are very intricate, detailed things, and I just wish there was more of an effort to really spend some time working on them to improve them.
I think it's also informative to hear Hirsha say, I mean, he's got a master's, he's working, and still hit the process. He's 6 years in and no end in sight. And the process, I don't know that most Americans understand what a long process it is to go through this legally. I mean, it takes more than a decade, it sounds like Hirsha is prepared for.
Yeah, I mean, there are currently 4 million people on a waiting list to get into the United States.
Wow.
That's a combination of the people who are sponsored based on their family ties to the U.S. and on their employment visas. And that's, you know, one of the things that I think both sides agreed on for a while was allowing folks like your caller to stay in this country. Somebody with those kind of degrees is obviously would be beneficial to this economy. We heard a lot of Republican presidential candidates over the last couple of cycles talk about this idea of stapling a green card onto the university degrees of foreign students who are here temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's not how it is right now. If you come into this country from India or China or any country and you get a PhD, you still then have to start applying for an employment visa, and that can be a very complicated and difficult thing. If you want to transition to a more long-term visa, if you want to get a green card, right, you get into that incredibly long wait list to get into the country. So that just shows you how antiquated our current immigration system is and how much it needs to be updated.
Call here from Andy in Plymouth. Hi, Andy. Thanks so much for waiting. What are you thinking about?
Hey, thank you as well. And hey, listen, I want to give you the perspective. I'm a conservative Republican, and you know, I first of all applaud you for talking about issues like this. I think we don't do enough of a deep dive in a more collective environment of opinions and perspectives about this stuff, especially at the public policy level.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a result, I mean, we've got so many vested perspectives in these topics like immigration, you know, from a political or an emotional or a financial, racial, cultural, spiritual, legal, you know, you got all these perspectives of and interests of people, many of which are actually trying to buy or influence people's opinions and appeal to them, particularly on the emotional level on this issue of immigration. And your earlier caller, that really disturbed me when the gentleman called in and said America is an idea, not a country. I don't agree with that at all. As a matter of fact, I think that's part of the perspective problem that we have and why we are such a polarized country. You know, people like me take that really to heart, is we're not an idea. And America is not open to the world to just automatically come into here and realize all the benefits. And if, you know what, if there's 4 million people waiting to get into this country, I'm not surprised. This is 340 million people in this country. That's a pretty small number in comparison to the population of this country. But you know, what the problem with immigration is, it's a generational failure brought on by the lack of will of our politicians. Back to the 1970s, immigration has been a problem in this country, which is really where a lot of the Dreamers were born out of, is we didn't enforce our laws in this country, and we had open borders, and people came in here at will, as they continued to prior to Donald Trump getting there. And I'm not here to make any kind of a pitch about Donald Trump. He has his shortfalls just the same as any other politician. But what his appeal to the broader public right now is on this issue is that we've got somebody finally saying, we wrote these laws. Chuck Schumer, who's been around for 30 years, has written some of these laws. And he stands up here as a hypocrite today and says, well, we need to do this and we need to give compassion and whatever. I mean, the guy's a lawyer himself. Follow the law, the laws that you wrote. You're the legislative branch of our government. If you're not going to follow the laws in this country, you have chaos.
So
without laws, you have chaos.
So,
that's
Andy,
the fact.
Yeah, I know your view is shared by a number of people that genuinely want to figure out how to resolve this. Alan, does Andy have the historical part of immigration reform right, in that we are reaping the broken policy that goes all the way back, you know, before Reagan?
I completely agree. I mean, this is the reason we're where we're at is because it was kind of working for everyone. A lot of big businesses were getting a lot of cheap labor,
right?
In many cases that they could exploit and treat and put through just horrible conditions. And the immigrants were more than happy to come over here and get the work. And so the response to that has been, sometimes it's the immigrants who just get bashed, but then they don't really go after the employers who have been happily hiring them. I mean, there was a period before the recession, there was a period in Mexico and Central America where it was pretty common to see job advertisements for U.S. companies, not exactly asking you to immigrate legally, but just to come on over and we'll give you a job. There are all sorts of employers who help undocumented immigrants figure out, you know, the tax ID numbers or the Social Security numbers that they can use to work in this country. And so what he's talking about shows how there's so many different sides to this. When he talked about all the different perspectives, right, everybody kind of benefited a little bit when we had a bunch of people coming in here working for cheap rates. But then when the economy crashed, all of a sudden we got to get rid of all these folks. So it's kind of scapegoating them a little bit in that respect. And so now we're in a situation where we have 4.1% unemployment. Things are relatively good and seem to be doing better with the economy. So it's a good time, I think, to be able to have that adult conversation, listening to all sides to get a better resolution to all this.
I'm really glad you brought up the business side of this, because am I right that E-Verify, and this is supposedly a data bank that businesses can log into to figure out if the applicant is legal, it is voluntary. Is it not required, or why aren't businesses using it if they're so worried about this?
Yeah, so it's a federal program that allows an employer, you got a job app, you know, you own a business, a job applicant comes in, and using E-Verify, you could just hop online real quick, put in their information, verify, okay, that's the person's name, that's the picture, it all lines up, okay, their immigration status is fine. So it's supposed to be a quick, easy check. But it hasn't, right now it is voluntary. A couple of states and the federal government requires its contractors to use it as well, but for the most part it is voluntary. And so getting that nationalized, making that a national requirement that all businesses do that, is a good example of just how complicated this whole immigration debate is. On the one hand, you hear that and you say, well, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't we do that? Well, because right now, everybody just understands that there are whole industries that would be absolutely crippled if they suddenly were forced to lose all of their undocumented labor.
I mean, this explains why, Alan, every now and then I hear someone talk about this in the media, this E-Verify, and then you never hear about it again, you know, for months on end. In some ways, I assume businesses really don't want to, many businesses don't want to have to use E-Verify.
And I think what they would tell you, and I tend to agree with them, is that they would be more than happy to do it if the U.S. had a guest worker program that worked. So in agriculture, for example, that's one industry that would be absolutely decimated if all of a sudden they had to verify 100% that all of their workers were here legally. They would be absolutely destroyed, but at the same time, there's an H-2A visa that is designed for agriculture workers to come in, but it's a tiny number, and it's so difficult to manage. I've spent a lot of time on farms and ranches talking with these folks, and what they tell me is, you know, the federal government asked me to predict a year ahead of time when my crop is going to come in and what 3, 4, 5 week period I'm going to need these workers. That's impossible. I can't do that. I need more flexibility, and I need something I can work with. So without a better guest worker program that actually suits them, they say, how can you expect us to use E-Verify?
George W. Bush really tried to do something with immigration overall and with the guest worker program, didn't he? And he was shot down by members of his own party, if I recall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's anytime a Republican or a conservative kind of sticks their neck out on this, they get hammered. You know, President Trump, he just got, you know, Breitbart labeled him Amnesty Don for proposing this deal. The aforementioned Center for Immigration Studies, they called it the art of the choke. Because, again, that was a group that was originally on board with protecting 800,000 Dreamers. But once it ballooned up to 1.8 million, okay, boom, that was the step too far. You know, Senator Marco Rubio from Florida is another example of this. He was part of the Gang of Eight in 2013 that was able to get a comprehensive immigration bill through the Senate. And he was sort of the conservative face. He had a lot of Tea Party support back then. And he just got destroyed.
Right.
And now in the current immigration debate, he's nowhere to be seen because of what he went through during that time. And he's just kind of sitting back saying, like, yeah, y'all have fun with that. See how you like that.
Cheryl says on Twitter, my now wife came here 28 years ago from the UK. We met and we've been together since, and we married the day it was legalized. We have an attorney now, but we've been hesitant to move forward because of the government. Staying under the radar seems safer. And to the phones to Seema in Minneapolis. Hi, appreciate you waiting.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, no problem. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Good morning to you both. Yes, I have a couple of points that I wanted to make. I myself am a migrant, and I immigrated here in 1990, and I came here legally. Mm-hmm. My first point I want to make is, like, I hear this DACA, Dreamers, all these people. I sympathize with them. I have nothing against them, you know. But my thing is that, why are they mad at the Republicans or the Democrats or any of these people? The people who they should be mad at is their own parents, because they were the ones who broke the law. They brought them here. They put them in the situation, not the Democrats, not the Republicans, or not anybody else. So why are they taking the frustrations out on? Nobody is doing anything for them. But why should anybody do anything for them when they knew very well? Their parents knew, being the adults and being the responsible person, they brought them and they put them in the situation, not anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second point
It's
like, you know, all these people, they say they are against for these people and this and that, but they are the first one to go and hire them for the cheap labors. If you are against for these people to be here, then don't hire them and don't get them in for the cheap labor. You know, you don't want them here, but on the other hand, you want cheap labor. You want to hire them. Then, you know, you're being a hypocrite by saying that you don't like them, but you want the cheap labor. You don't want others to hire. You don't want to pay more. So, I mean, you know, I don't understand.
Seema, I really appreciate the call and your own perspective on this. And Alan, I think what she was saying about parents, I wondered if you've done some reporting where you've actually talked to the parents of DACA kids about how they viewed this when they were making the decision.
Yeah, I mean, for them, they don't apologize. Hey, I wanted a better life for my children. I wanted a better life for them, and this is where to do it. And so you're not going to get many apologies from them. But what Simi raised, which I thought was really interesting, is the idea that, you know, I fault sometimes the left for accusing anybody who's against protecting Dreamers or legalizing undocumented immigrants of just labeling them racist.
That's
and
right.
It's just something that comes out way too quick, and it's driven me crazy over the years. I can't tell you how many immigrant families I've spoken to who say exactly the same thing. Say, hey, I waited all that time. I waited in line. My family did it the right way, and so this is how it should be done. But to respond to the one thing she was saying, that these Dreamers should blame their parents, it's one thing to blame them, but then what's the next step?
Yeah.
I mean, does she really want, you know, 800,000, 1.8 million of these dreamers who were brought here? Does she really want them all to go back to their home countries? That's the step where it's just kind of hard to square, I think.
Jeff says on Twitter, look, I haven't had a significant pay increase for 8 years, and I was on a pay freeze for a few of those years. I'm an engineer with over a decade of experience. Is it possible that businesses are abusing the H-1B visa system? Do you know, Alan?
In some cases, without question, I've heard horror stories of U.S. computer programmers, working, and then one day a bunch of folks come in on H-1B visas. The Americans are asked to retrain the new folks, and then they get laid off. But I've also talked to so many business owners who say, look, we have looked all over this country for the kind of workers that we need. They go on these circuits around the country at universities trying to find computer programmers, trying to find, you know, the specific kind of engineers that they need in whatever their industry is. And they say that just we are not graduating enough of them. And so they have to go overseas to find the quote unquote the best and the brightest, the ones who have this kind of education. So there should absolutely be reforms in this system, and that gets back to the H-1B visa that we were talking about earlier. It needs to be reformed, and it needs to be done in a way to make sure that it's not being taken advantage of. But we do need to be able to bring in people from other countries to bolster our economy and to help all these businesses around the country who are having a lot of trouble finding these workers.
A call here from Oleg in Rochester. Hi, Oleg. You're also an immigrant, is that right?
Yes, I'm an immigrant. I'm a naturalized U.S. Citizen, about a year now. And I went myself through all the steps of immigration, in this country. And I, firsthand know what a patchwork of laws it is, and it's highly dysfunctional. And it was when I was going through that, I just, there is a wonderful system just north of us in Canada, which I like a lot because it's has a potential to become very, very useful because, A, it's very structured. You get the points. If you have a degree in a certain area, you get that number of points. You know English well, you get that number of points. You have relatives in Canada, you get extra points. And basically, if you're immigrant, you know what you have to do. You have to learn English, you have to have study. And the bonus point, as for the government, they can regulate how many immigrants do they want at a particular time. Let's say if there is, a recession, they can increase the number of points you need to get. And you get less immigrants, and it becomes very flexible. It has a feedback to it.
Yeah, Oleg, let me do this. I want to go to Alan because we only have a few minutes. I was hearing about this as well, the way Canada calibrates their immigration limits. What do they know, Alan, that we don't?
Well, I mean, part of it is geography. There's not millions of people trying to get their way into Canada. So we face a very unique situation where our challenge is trying to limit how many people are trying to get in here. But the way that they've done it has been so effective, where I'll give you one good example. There's so many high-tech visa or people trained in STEM, in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics that can't get into the U.S. because of our system. So tons of them have gone to Vancouver, and this tech industry has boomed over there in recent decades, to the point that Microsoft even opened a plant over there or an office up there to take advantage of all those workers over there. So, yeah, it works from, again, the economic perspective. But, again, there are different factors in the United States, the geography of it, where people can come across that southern border. And, again, getting back to that sort of core idea of who we are as a country. Are we going to be a place that only allows you in if you have a master's and can speak English? Or are we going to be that historical version of the United States of that we see in the Statue of Liberty and that historical role that we've played in the world?
I hear you loud and clear on your concern about the way this is being debated and handled in Congress. I mean, I think you're saying we need a debate like we had around health care and the Affordable Care Act,
right.
Not all this behind the scenes maneuvering. Now, how do you think it'll end up being?
Well, it's not going to be like that for sure, at least for the most immediate crisis that we're facing. Look, every single aspect of our immigration law is incredibly complicated. You push on one side, you have to react on another side, and it does take a lot of time to really understand it, so we're not just kind of talking in vague generalities, as I'm hearing so many people in Congress doing right now. The problem is the way that Washington is working right now. You know, we're facing a February 8th deadline risking a government shutdown if they don't strike a deal on this. And then in March, we have another deadline when the DACA recipients will start losing their protection. So they're having to do this fast forward. They're having to do this in a rushed way. And it's terrible because I think we've seen before that they can find agreement in a lot of these areas. It's just hard to do it when you're negotiating through the press or you're negotiating quickly in back rooms.
Alan, I feel like we've really benefited from your years of reporting on this. I really appreciate you sharing that with us today. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Alan Gomez is the immigration reporter for USA Today. You can hear all of our immigration discussions on the podcast and find it in the archive.